The Great Dempseys by Brianna McMahon. Narrated by Greer Davis. Content warning. Dear readers, this book contains materials that some may find potentially triggering or traumatizing, including suicidal ideation, attempted suicide, and abuse. Part 1. Chapter 1. Audrey. Great Grey. Complicated. That was the word Audrey would use to explain her relationship with mornings. For instance, she loved her and her father's tradition of waking up early on the weekends and, weather permitting, going for long walks along the Hudson. There was something magical about New York in the morning, something unknowable. In the early hours, while most still slept, Audrey could pretend the city was a secret only she and her father had discovered. He adored New York, more than Audrey ever had, or could. When she was with him, seeing the city through his eyes, she found herself appreciating New York a little more. Its culture, its history, its people. And she loved that. She loved feeling more connected to a place that had never quite felt like home to her. She didn't, however, love being unceremoniously awoken or going to sleep knowing she had to be up at a certain time. The city wasn't so magical then. No, instead, it was loud and obnoxious, with sirens, construction, and cars, not to mention people all screaming at each other over the most mundane things. The morning of August 28, 1978, was the latter, as it was a morning when Audrey had to wake up early. It was her first day of school. Not just her first day of school, but the first day of her sophomore year. And through some process Audrey still didn't quite understand, she would now be attending Great Grey, one of the most prestigious private schools in New York. It all started when Principal What's-His-Face from her middle school had put her name forward as someone who was worthy, whatever that meant, of attending Great Grey. No way, Audrey had thought. Impossible. Great Grey was an expensive school for rich families, which the Nielsens were not. Apparently, though, Audrey didn't need to worry about this, as she hadn't secured one of the scholarship positions for that year. Instead, for her freshman year, she attended a public high school and all returned to normal. Unbeknownst to her, however, her parents had applied for her to be transferred to Great Grey for her sophomore year. Her grades were solid, as were her extracurriculars, and against all odds, she'd managed to procure her spot as a transfer student on a full scholarship. Though her family was not destitute by any means, they lived in a two-bedroom apartment in Greenwich Village. Audrey knew they could not afford the tuition of a place like Great Grey. Alexander, her father, worked as a shoe repairman, or as he called himself, a cobbler. And while he earned enough money to support his two daughters and his wife Sophia, he didn't have a lot to spare. Claire, the oldest of the girls, was attending New York University, which was enough of a financial strain. Adding Great Grey into the mix would be, in Audrey's estimation, too much. Besides, the economy was tanking and everything was a mess. At every turn, though, and despite all of her thoughtfully reasoned objections, Alexander and Sophia assured her they weren't letting her give up on such an amazing, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Yes, Audrey agreed attending Great Grey would be an incredible honor, but she didn't know if it was something she wanted. She'd been going to school with the same kids since preschool, and she'd already finished 1 year of high school. At Great Grey, she'd have to make new friends, whose friends were as far removed from hers as Antarctica was from a tropical climate. What if she didn't make friends there? What if she didn't belong? But her own feelings on the matter were inconsequential, apparently, as her parents made the decision without even asking for her input. As soon as they'd heard that Audrey had, in fact, been offered one of the scholarship positions, they'd enthusiastically accepted on her behalf. She was now a member of Great Grey's class of 1981. "Isn't this amazing, sweets?" Sophia had asked her, her eyes twinkling with so much excitement that all Audrey could muster was a resigned nod. And so, on the morning of August 28th, Audrey wasn't in the best mood. Though months had passed since she learned about Great Grey, she still resented her parents for having made the decision without consulting her. Didn't her opinion matter? Didn't they know they were ripping her away from her comfort zone, her life? "You'll make new friends," Alexander insisted at the breakfast table as he read the Wall Street Journal. In many ways, Alexander was a mystery to Audrey. He was fascinated by the stock market and learned all he could about it, but he never dabbled. He was far too financially cautious to risk his money like that. It was the same reason he never went to casinos or bought a lottery ticket. Great Grey, however, was a different story. To him, it was not a financial risk, but an investment in his youngest daughter's future. "Maybe," said Audrey, shrugging. "Probably not, though."
"Don't say that. Of course you will."
Alexander gave her a thumbs up for extra encouragement, reminding Audrey of those horrid days when she had to run the mile and the gym teacher would cheer them on from the sidelines.
"Oh, thanks. That's real helpful. Just like that, all my nerves are gone. Poof, like magic."
Alexander laughed. "Come on, Audie," he said, reassuringly touching her hand. "You're gonna be just fine. Great Grey is an amazing school."
"Sure, but at the end of the day, it's just a school."
"A school that Supreme Court justices and senators have attended," he reminded her, as if either of those was a career path that interested Audrey.
Hearing all the noise, Sophia sauntered out of the bedroom, wrapped in her favorite robe. She beamed when she saw Audrey, and she placed her hand to her chest.
"You look beautiful in your uniform, Audie," Sophia said.
"Thanks," said Audrey. "It's not very me, but you look beautiful," Sophia reiterated, nodding for emphasis. She walked over to Audrey, a wistful smile on her lips.
"Oh, I remember when I used to have hair like yours," she mused,
running her fingers through Audrey's Farrah Fawcett-inspired hair.
"Mom, careful!"
"Sorry, sweets. Here, let me...
There, good as new."
Sophia always loved to mention how much Audrey favored her, with her honey blonde hair and green eyes. Every one of Audrey's yearbook photos, it seemed, reminded Sophia of the youth she'd once possessed. And while Audrey was deeply flattered by the comparison, she couldn't help but note a trace of sadness in Sophia's eyes when she looked at her, as if in disbelief that she was old enough to have one daughter in college and another in high school. Children, it seemed, served as a constant reminder of the passage of time, the growing distance between the adolescents parents had once been and the adults they now were. Alexander averted his attention to the clock on the wall.
"But you better get moving, love. Don't want to be late."
Audrey gave him a look. "If I miss the subway, another will come along."
"I know, it's just you're not all that familiar with uptown, and it's a bit of a walk from the station to Great Grey, so..."
"She'll be fine," Sophia said, exchanging a knowing look with Audrey.
"I'm pretty smart, you know,"
Audrey piped up.
"Yes, I know," Alexander sighed. "Just keep your wits about you, yeah?"
"Don't worry, I'll be careful. I always am." Alexander smiled.
"I'm just so proud of you, Audie."
"Thanks, Dad." Audrey kissed his cheek. "Love you." She pulled Sophia into an embrace. "Both of you." "Bye, Audie," said Sophia, waving as though Audrey were departing on a transatlantic voyage.
Despite her father's fears, Audrey had a little trouble navigating her way to Great Grey. She and her parents had visited the school over the summer to scout out the area.
"Can't risk you getting lost now, can we?"
Alexander had teased, all too familiar with Audrey's embarrassingly poor sense of direction. Audrey remembered joking whether they called it Great Grey because the building was big and constructed from, wouldn't you know it, gray stone. No, her father had informed her with a chuckle. It was because the mascot was a great gray owl. And while Audrey had found that explanation to be lacking, Alexander had then pointed out the gray, black, and white crest above the front door that boasted what must have been a great gray owl in the center.
Audrey simply took her father's word for it, as her knowledge of birds was severely limited. Thus, grudgingly, Audrey had to concede the point, but not without noting that the gray building wasn't coincidental. Now, as Audrey gazed at Great Gray's exterior, she had to admit it was undeniably striking, with its polished stone and fenced-in courtyard. A few students were milling about, reacquainting before the start of the new year. Though Audrey had always been a social butterfly, she dreaded the prospect of having to make friends. Maybe she wouldn't be the only new kid. Maybe some other sophomores were also transfer students.
"Out of this rat hole,"
a boy was saying to his four friends. Or, more accurately, minions, as they struck Audrey as boys who had no existence outside of their appointed leader. But their leader was certainly nothing to write home about, reminding her of every soon-to-be-disgraced politician apologizing for his misdeeds. He would have been labeled a nobody at her old high school, but since his family was obviously wealthy, the boy proudly wore an expensive-looking, ill-fitting watch. He was probably one of the popular kids. Effortlessly, Audrey could envision him as that 50-year-old man still telling stories about his high school glory days, living vicariously through his suffering son.
"But we're seniors now," the boy went on, "and you know what that means."
He removed a cigarette from his pocket, lighting it up with a clear aura of discomfort, as if it were something he'd never done before.
"We can skip out whenever we want."
They all laughed at that, revealing just how pitiful their senses of humor were. One of the other boys called their leader Alistair, which cemented to Audrey that she'd truly entered another world. Only people with serious money were named Alistair. Perhaps naively, Audrey hoped these boys weren't indicative of the sorts of people she'd meet at Great Gray, but she wasn't all that optimistic. A part of Audrey had assumed that private school kids would be more well-mannered than their public school counterparts. But clearly, regardless of their upbringing, teenagers were teenagers, entitled, boastful, and annoying. Upon entering the school, Audrey saw that most of the students were already being escorted into the auditorium for what she assumed was the obligatory first day of school assembly. No doubt, they'd be subjected to the same speech they'd been given every year since kindergarten. Bullying is bad, your teachers are here to help you, and detentions go on your permanent record. Audrey wasn't sure what a permanent record was, or if it even existed, but it had been mentioned so many times, she assumed it had to be real. At this point, Audrey could deliver the speech herself, and much more humorously, if she did say so herself. "Name," a student asked her, though it sounded more like a demand.
"Audrey Nielsen. I'm a sophomore, but..."
"Over there to the left."
Audrey scooted to the left. To her relief, most of the students around her looked just as nervous as she was. Hopefully, she would be able to find a good group of friends. She didn't want to feel like a pariah for too long. Only one student stood in front of Audrey, and three were standing behind her. One girl with flaming red hair sat at the reception table, thumbing through the list of students and corresponding schedules.
"Next,"
said the redhead, pointing at Audrey. As Audrey neared her, the redhead simply said,
"Name?"
Were some of these student helpers planning future careers as drill sergeants? They acted as though they resented Audrey for simply existing and going through the same rigmarole as everyone else. The redhead was clicking her gum, her eyes on the Cosmopolitan magazine she had unsubtly placed beneath her list of student names.
"Audrey Nielsen?"
The redhead nodded distractedly, then handed Audrey her schedule. "This will tell you where your classes are. Do you have any questions?" Audrey stared at the schedule, struggling to take it all in. Yes, as a matter of fact, she did have questions. Lots of them. For one, how was she supposed to know where these rooms were? Some of the rooms had numbers, and others had letters. And why did she have two different classes listed at the same time?
"Here at Great Gray, we alternate between gray and black days," the redhead explained. "Today's a gray day, so for fifth period, you'll go to gym. On black days, you'll have study hall."
"Oh, okay. That makes sense. Thanks."
"Sure." The redhead cracked her version of a smile. "The auditorium's over there to your left.
Principal Waverly will tell you more about what to expect here at Great Gray.
Audrey was spellbound by the auditorium's grandiosity. Four pillars lined the aisle, two on each side. Windows flanked the left and right walls, reminding Audrey that the real world did, in fact, exist outside this place. The school crest hung above the stage, complete with some pretentious Latin words. Virtus, virtus, Victoria. Audrey could hardly believe she was now attending a school with a motto, and a Latin one at that. She claimed a seat at the back of the auditorium, with no one immediately around her. Then she surveyed the room. Everyone was wearing variations of the same outfit, black pants or a black skirt, with a white dress shirt and a gray and white checkered tie. Audrey found the ensemble to be dreadfully dull, with minimal room for self-expression. Some of the female students, though, embellished their outfits with the kind of jewelry Audrey had only seen in Fifth Avenue storefronts.
"Good morning, students. Good morning," said Principal Waverly with pseudo-enthusiasm and a matching smile.
He looked like he should have been a librarian and lived every day perplexed as to how he'd become a principal.
"I'm sure you are all ready and excited to start a new school year. As the principal of Great Gray, it is my honor to welcome you, some of you again, and some of you for the first time. Yes, I see many familiar faces out there, and for those I don't recognize, I look forward to getting to know each and every one of you, but hopefully not for the, unfortunate reasons," he added with an awkward chuckle.
From her vantage point, Audrey could see the rest of the auditorium. Most students were engaged in their own side conversations, acting as though Principal Waverly wasn't even there. Some students were even plucky enough to outright leave, and Audrey couldn't blame them, and secretly wished she had joined them. Principal Waverly wasn't a gifted public speaker, and he was delusional to think that teenagers, especially this early in the morning, would give him any of their attention.
"Here at Great Gray, we live by three words. Virtus, virtus, Victoria," Principal Waverly continued, seemingly unaware that very few students were actually listening. "For those of you who do not speak fluent Latin, these words mean excellence, virtue, and success. It is our most sincere hope that what you learn here at Great Gray will carry you through the rest of your lives."
As Principal Waverly droned on about school policies and expectations, Audrey reminisced about warm summer days biking in Central Park. She fondly remembered staying in East Hampton for the 4th of July and her birthday, grilling and relaxing on the beach. This was the last place she wanted to be, in a stuffy auditorium, listening to a middle-aged man trying to relate to her and her peers. Audrey knew she was zoning out, but she was too lazy to zone back in. A few seconds later, she felt a swift breeze, then heard someone sit down on the open seat to her left. Instinctively, Audrey turned, curious as to who this latecomer was. It took everything inside Audrey not to stare. He was outrageously handsome, boasting what could only be dubbed as movie star good looks. While most adolescent boys opted for longer, feathered hairstyles, he did not. On the contrary, he sported an Ivy League haircut, with his dark brown hair parted to the left. As he settled into his seat, his head turned slightly toward Audrey, and she caught a glimpse of his baby blue eyes. He was zealously scrawling in his notebook, his hand racing across the paper. Audrey stared for a beat too long as he finally felt her eyes on him and looked up.
"Hi," he said, offering a smile, revealing yet another attractive feature. Dimples.
Audrey had never struggled to make conversation before, but in his company, she balked, scrambling to invent a suitably witty response to his simplest of greetings. She understood the importance of first impressions, and she didn't want him to think she was shy, or even worse, boring.
"Hi,"
she said at last, instantly regretting her uninspired choice. She sank into her chair, cheeks burning. Before she could say anything more to him, Principal Waverly informed the room that next Friday there would be a fair for all of Great Gray's clubs and activities. Though many of the sports teams had already begun practicing, some were still open to new members. Audrey actually felt her eyes gloss over when she heard the word sports. And to her shock, he mentioned there was a polo team. People under the age of 40 played polo? Was Great Gray trying to prepare their students for lives of leisure as members of some ridiculously expensive social club?
Please be sure to attend the fair so you can get involved in all that Great Gray has to offer, Principal Waverly said. Now, thank you all for your undivided attention, he went on without a trace of irony. Let's make this the best year yet. Please, at this time, make your way to your homerooms.
Principal Waverly walked up the aisle, waving at students as though they were fans of his. Only a few desperate brown-nosers waved back. Audrey wondered what Principal Waverly had dreamed of becoming and what had happened in his life to lead him to this point, where he required the adoration of teenagers to be happy. Audrey pulled out her schedule to see where her homeroom was. Of course, she had no idea which rooms were where, so she'd probably end up roaming the halls for 20 minutes. By then, she would already be late for her first class. Hardly a good way to demonstrate how grateful she was to be here.
Are you a freshman? The boy asked her.
No, I'm a sophomore, but I just transferred here.
Oh!
He smiled warmly.
Well, welcome to Great Gray.
Thanks.
She smiled in return, proud of herself for maintaining her composure. The boy leaned forward.
I know they don't give you much help on where things are. If you want, I could walk you to your homeroom.
To Audrey's delight, his accent was decidedly New York. It wasn't as strong as a Brooklyn accent, for instance, but she clearly heard it when he pronounced walk more like walk.
That'd be great, thanks,
said Audrey, elated she had an excuse to spend more time with him. He grinned.
I'm Bobby, by the way. I'm a sophomore, too.
Audrey.
So, Audrey, where are we headed?
Let's see.
Audrey consulted her schedule with furrowed brows. Room 418. They stood up, and Audrey was surprised by how tall Bobby was. He had to be almost 6 feet tall. As they walked, Bobby asked her if she was nervous about her first day. Audrey admitted she was, as she'd never been good with change.
It's different from my old school, she said.
I'm sure you'll be just fine, Bobby said, suddenly stopping. Here we are.
Oh.
Audrey was strangely disappointed they were already parting.
Well, thanks again.
Of course.
He shifted on his feet.
I'll see you around.
Yeah, see you too,
Audrey said, waving awkwardly. Luckily, Bobby couldn't hear her pathetic response over the swell of students who had just arrived in the hallway. With her head hanging low, Audrey entered her homeroom, trying to refocus her attention. The first day of school was always absurdly monotonous, with every teacher giving the same speech on expectations and time management. Some tried to strike fear into the hearts of their students, claiming that tardiness and late assignments would result in automatic Fs. Others assumed the opposite approach, trying to be all buddy-buddy with the students, with equally ineffective results. Going from teacher archetype to teacher archetype was a form of whiplash for which Audrey had not been prepared. Thankfully, though, she had lunch sixth period, so she made her way to the cafeteria. All the tables were rectangular, with three seats on each side. She glanced around the room, knowing very well that her social future depended on where and with whom she sat. Unintentionally, Audrey could ruin her whole high school experience by sitting with the wrong people, or even worse, sitting alone. To her surprise and endless relief, Cassandra Irvine, a girl from her geometry class, stood up from her table and waved her over.
Audrey, over here!
Audrey didn't exactly know why Cassandra wanted to sit with her and her friends, but she wasn't about to refuse such a kind offer. Instead, Audrey walked over to the table,
As she did so, Cassandra signaled for one of the girls to move over so Audrey could sit in the middle chair directly across from Cassandra.
Hi,
Audrey said to the other girls at the table, none of whom she recognized from her earlier classes.
This is Lisa,
Cassandra started, motioning to the girl on Audrey's left.
And this is Shelley and Barb.
She pointed at each girl in turn.
Girls, Audrey is new here.
Disconcertingly, Lisa, Shelley, and Barb were almost spitting images of Cassandra with their shoulder-length half-dos and accessorized uniforms. The girls leaned forward as a unit, their curiosity piqued. Lisa placed her elbows on the table.
New from where?
I went to a school in the village, Audrey replied.
Is that a different country?
Asked Barb.
Audrey laughed.
Maybe to some people.
None of the girls laughed with her. Barb, for her part, seemed genuinely perplexed, and Audrey began to fear that Barb actually thought the village was, in fact, a different country. Perhaps money didn't equate to a better education after all.
I thought the village was for poor people,
Shelley interjected. Before Audrey could respond to that, Cassandra shot Shelley a piercing look.
Oh, is that where you live?
Cassandra asked, redirecting her attention to Audrey.
Greenwich Village?
After Audrey nodded in response, Cassandra asked,
So, what are you doing here?
It sounded like an innocent question, but Audrey sensed an underlying accusatory edge. The girls were staring at her, waiting for her answer. Audrey shifted in her seat. She felt as though she were being interviewed for a job, one she was evidently woefully unqualified for.
I earned my place here,
Audrey said, perhaps a bit too defensively. Cassandra broke into a conciliatory smile.
Of course you did. We all did.
Audrey didn't know what to make of that. Had they all earned their place here? Barb didn't even know where or what the village was, and Shelley certainly hadn't learned anything about manners, as far as Audrey could tell. Not willing to rock the boat, however, or ostracize herself from this potential friend group, Audrey simply grimaced.
I guess we did, she said flatly. Well, we're happy you're here now, Cassandra went on, and the girls and I will be more than happy to help you fit in with the rest of us,
she added, her eyes on Audrey's unadorned uniform.
Oh, that's nice of you.
As Audrey said these words, dread pooled in the pit of her stomach.
Cassandra is always so nice and thoughtful,
piped up Shelley, which didn't do much to assuage Audrey's mounting doubts.
I bought this dress one time, Lisa began, visibly eager to illustrate Shelley's point. And Cassandra told me it wasn't my color. She was right, of course.
Cassandra nodded sagely.
You look positively garish in yellow.
Audrey's eyes widened. Would this be her future, being told what to wear by some 5'2" dictator? Maybe she would have been better off sitting by herself if this was the alternative.
Don't worry, Cassandra told Audrey. I bet you look good in every color, especially...
She trailed off, absently stroking her many glittering bracelets.
Green.
Jeepers, gasped Shelley, eyeing Cassandra's bracelets. Are those new? Cassandra shrugged.
Oh, these? Just a back-to-school gift from Daddy.
As the girl squealed with delight, Audrey took a large bite of her sandwich and, perhaps melodramatically, hoped she would choke. The last three classes were much more enjoyable than the previous five. Audrey got to meet her English teacher, Mrs. Parker, who, though undoubtedly intimidating, possessed a dry wit that Audrey appreciated. And, dissimilarly to some of the other teachers Audrey had already met, Mrs. Parker did not allow her students to walk all over her. Within the first 5 minutes of class, Mrs. Parker had sent some boy down to detention for flinging rubber bands at the back of a girl's head. He claimed he was just joking around, but Mrs. Parker wasn't in the mood for such juvenile antics. Audrey wished she had shown that same grit during lunch, that she'd called out Cassandra and her friends for their judgmental comments. A little under an hour later, Audrey was back home. Her mother was in the living room, and as soon as Audrey walked through the door, Sophia sprung to her feet, peppering her with all sorts of questions about Great Gray.
How was your first day? Did you make any friends? What are your teachers like? Do you already have homework?
Audrey answered her questions as vaguely as possible, knowing very well she wouldn't mention Cassandra or the other girls. She knew how important it was to her parents for her to fit in, and she didn't want them to be worried about her. Audrey started giving Sophia her assessment of Mrs. Parker, the school's most daunting English teacher, and Alexander walked in.
"They say she fails students just to make them cry," Audrey told them. "I don't think I believe it, but she does have that look about her. I kind of like her, though. She's funny. Has that Aunt Trina sarcasm."
"Oh, no. There's two of them?" joked Alexander.
"Well, we're so proud of you, Audie," Sophia said, unable to suppress her palpable glee. That was one of the things Audrey loved most about her mother, her unwavering positivity. "Really, Dad and me, we were just saying this morning how impressed we are by you. It's a big change, we know, but you'll do great."
"And don't forget, love," Alexander piped up. "High school is the best years of your life, so soak it all up."
Sophia added,
"Oh, and next Saturday, we're all going out to dinner to celebrate this new school year."
"All of us?" asked Audrey. "Including Claire?"
"Well, of course," said Sophia, oblivious to Audrey's tone.
Though Audrey loved Claire, the two had never been particularly close. And Audrey would have been lying if she said that having Claire out of the apartment and in one of the NYU dorms hadn't been a dream. In fact, when their parents had decided a dorm would be worth the extra money to ensure Claire had the whole college experience, Audrey hadn't protested. Now, it was just Audrey at home, and she'd already gotten used to having the bedroom all to herself.
"Right, I won't forget," Audrey said. "Well, dinner's almost ready, sweets."
After dinner, Audrey handed over all the paperwork to Alexander to sign. Predictably, he made the same joke he always did, remarking how he felt like Elvis Presley signing autographs. Audrey laughed, as she always did, not wanting her father to ever think he'd lost his touch. Eventually, the evening morphed into night. Because the apartment contained only one bathroom, they had devised a schedule for who could use it when. It was a routine they had down to the minute. The wonderful parents they were, Sophia and Alexander always let their daughters go first. With Claire out of the lineup, Audrey was the first one on the list. The night before, Audrey had been racked with anxiety, stewing over every possibility, living through every worst-case scenario. Tonight, however, her anxiety was more centered, grounded in the reality of how her first day at Great Gray had gone. As she closed her eyes, she saw Cassandra Irvine and her posse laughing and pointing at her.
"You don't belong here," they said in chorus. "You never will."